We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I don't know if you've caught this. There is some misinformation out there, Ray. The Stanley Cup will be won on a Canadian sheet of ice for the first time since 1993 is a headline I've seen in more than one place. That headline is wrong. Do you know what's wrong with that headline?
Because I don't think Montreal won at home in 1993.
It was Vancouver, by the way. Boston, Vancouver, correct, in 1993?
Roger, oh, that was 94.
So in 2011, that's when the Bruins beat the Canucks in Game 7, but that game
was in Canada.
So the Stanley Cup has seen a Canadian sheet of ice. It just wasn't seen by the Canadian team on the Canadian sheet of ice. But if we're talking, where is your sheet of ice in Canada? The 2011 Stanley Cup was there. The last time a team from Canada won the Stanley Cup is 1993. Les Habitants, what a year. So Chicago was in the running big time to be one of the hubs of the NHL. It turns out, it looks like, has this been a officially decided, Ray? Are they still waiting for a vote, or that happens tonight? But we're going to have
it's pro forma. No, Vancouver dropped out a little while ago because they weren't convinced that the NHL's protocols for keeping the virus in check were going to be good enough by provincial standards. So they dropped out. It was basically Edmonton, Toronto, Las Vegas, and Chicago had not dropped out either, but In the intervening week, Chicago became a long shot because they really wanted Vegas. They wanted Vegas bad, and Vegas spiked. Vegas spiked like crazy, and they finally just said, "You know what? There's no value in having Vegas if we're going to have to shut it down a week later." So they basically just said, "All right, it's Edmonton and Toronto," and even though those aren't perfect spots for the virus either, they are better than anything in America by a fair amount.
And that's the crazy part of this. You know, one of the things, and Butcher, I think you're back. I think I can hear you stirring around there. So one of the things that we were talking about before you joined the show this week was that Australia might have been the better place for the, I mean, we know so much now, right? As Florida's spiking, as everyone, Australia actually had like a decent amount of basketball infrastructure, and it could have been a cooperative television time zone partner as well. Should the NBA see Orlando go up in a poof, you know, it feels too late to move it to Australia now, but getting out of the United States is probably one of the best ways to go about avoiding the pandemic. And that's embarrassing, but it is who we are.
Yeah, it absolutely is who we are. And the thing is, from my understanding, I remember we had that guy on last week when I was filling in. It sounds like they have certain infrastructure in place to at least accommodate basketball in Australia. So that makes a whole lot of sense. Again, I'm just going off what other sports are doing, and I've seen in the, whether it's soccer or golf, everybody's taking like a 2-week quarantine before they travel to a foreign country and go in. If everybody, you know, does their quarantine and they all travel together, and to me, it makes a whole lot of sense on a lot of fronts. And the only thing that makes it a little tricky is the time zone difference. But I'm sure television will work that thing out.
Look, it kind of would have. They would have been early in the day games to have primetime games here. That's why Australia still would have been a cooperative television partner. But we all know that that's not going to happen. I mean, it's just it's going to be Orlando or bust. And MLS, the first to get to the Orlando or bust experiment, is looking at their bubble burst a little bit. News that broke not long before we came on the show today was that FC Dallas had six players test positive once the team reached the bubble and got inside of it. They had done all of the testing in Dallas before getting to Orlando, and they still had spread. And again, six players on one team is a lot of spread. That's a quick amount of spread. That's the kind of spread that makes you think, well, maybe FC Dallas has to be sent home long term. I mean, really, I don't know how you can count on that team being a participant thinking that, you know, the exposure wasn't nearly 100%. You don't know. If six people can get it, everyone might have it. And it's just a headache that soccer is dealing with today. I mean, their bubble bursts instantly. And this is the bubble that basically the NBA is going to be looking at, that they hope will provide enough safety net for them to get in all these games as quickly as possible. I think they got a shot, but it's starting to look less and less like a good shot each and every day. Having said all that, sports are important in terms of just focusing our attention back on this. You know, the argument has been made that, you know, if we didn't go back to sports, we could really, really focus on all that mattered. Well, you got to give some people in sports some credit for focusing on the right things. And who has ever said this before? Look at the SEC lead the way. Like, the SEC used this moment in time to change Mississippi's state flag with sports financial pressure. And even though the financial pressure is on all these SEC schools to have a robust crowd for every home game they got scheduled, every single SEC coach has done pretty much a wear a mask outdoors when you're around other people PSA. And you would think that might be the least or the last body of coaches to that point. They were actually the first league-wide, not Pac-12, Not Big Ten, the SEC, if your grandma dies, she dies. It's all about football. SEC is taking this a little bit more carefully, at least optically early on, than a lot of places. And that brings me to what we learned today. Georgia's governor, who has been Johnny, let's reopen. I mean, he wanted you to go and get a tattoo 4 weeks ago in Georgia. You have the right to get a tattoo. Well, now he's saying, we need masks. I was wrong about telling you didn't need a mask. And if you want a if you want college football, you better grab a mask. That is weaponizing sports to send a message to a whole bunch of people that might not have gotten it. I like it. I like it a lot.
It's an interesting message coming from a guy who basically pandered to the no mask crowd for as long as he did. And it's his turnaround is still too late, I think. But the more important thing than the fact that this guy came to it so late is that this is driven for the same reason that he said we want the state to be wide open. It's they're worried that the University of Georgia is not going to be able to haul in the kind of money they haul in for the seven games they play in Athens every year. I mean, that's what that's about. In the same way that Alabama yesterday was, you know, was the subject of, oh my God, we're going to lose $2 billion. You know, it's not really about health. It's about, oh my God, somebody at the university just told me how much they're going to lose if we don't get this thing at least looking like it's not out of control. And you know, today in Florida, there was another 6,500 positive tests. So it's going to take a long time because all the time they spent convincing people they didn't need masks made it become not only a political but a cultural thing for them. And now you're telling them to do it. I think a lot of people are going to go, nah, you already told us what we want to hear. So I think, you know, yeah, he came to it late, but I think he came to it way too late and didn't think about this, you know, even remotely well enough, even by his own pragmatic standards, which was, we'll lose money if we don't do this right. And they're going to lose money because they haven't done it right.
Damon, on as far as like him using college football as, I don't know, the apple in front of the cart, if you will. I don't know. I feel like that's more of a sad indictment of where we're at as a society. Like, hey, if you do these things right, we'll give you dessert. Like, you're talking to your children here. Don't get me wrong. I love sports as much as anyone does. I mean, I want them back more than anybody does right now. But I always just look at that as more of a sad indictment on society. And yes, if it helps work and champion the cause, absolutely, I'm all for it. But I mean, are we this dense? Sadly, I guess we are. It's just, it's frustrating when I hear that for me, because it's like, man, where's the common sense, people? You really need to have college football dangled out in front of you and the fact that you might lose it for you to wear a mask? Man, that's
it might
just
be a sad indictment, but it's sad indictments are all I see when I look out my front window and I look at society. Every single decision is hard to wonder why you reached it and why you went about reaching it this way. And I do agree that the governor of Georgia went about it the wrong way, and maybe the horse is too far out of the barn to get it back in now. But I do know that sports and sports fans being scared and aware of COVID-19 was the launching pad of the entire United States taking it seriously. If not for the night of the NBA going dark and everybody getting scared in Oklahoma City, I don't think that, look at it this way, we didn't have a very good response, but if it wasn't very good in light of all that, how bad might it have been without that? I think sports has really provided one of the safest avenues to make things safer this entire time, and I really hope during relaunches they aren't just getting hit with shaving cream pies left and right by the reality of COVID-19. When we come on back, there are two absolute holidays being celebrated in New York today. New York City. What is going on in New York City? Well, happy birthday, Sports Talk Radio, and it is Bobby Bowe Day. Very good to be Bobby Bowe. We're going to look at that. A little contractual head scratching. Yeah, that's around the corner. And stay with us because starting on Monday, you are invited to join the conversation at 95.7 The Game. Select your top 10 Bay Area athletes ever. And we are going to be putting the official list together once and for all. Get your submissions ready. The debate starts on Monday here on 95.7 The Game. Damon Ratto and Kolsky with the Butcher Boy in this afternoon here on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
A lot of talk about sports, sports place in society. The microcosm of society can be seen through the lens of sports every time you look at it. Ian Desmond's Instagram post was about that. Doug Glanville, he wrote something for ESPN's The Undefeated, which was very much leaning in that direction. You don't have to look too far at the problems that are all over the country to see the problems that are all over the sports. And sports really are a conversation that allows us to talk about bigger things while we're talking about totally disposable things, you know, like RBIs and home run totals. But there are bigger things to be had. Sports are amazing. And it was in my lifetime where people realized that sports are now such a part of the conversation that there's no reason to stop that conversation in the name of turning to weather, another song, or another piece of news or something like that. Sports talk radio was invented in my lifetime. One year I was delivering newspapers and it wasn't there. And then one year, boom, it was. And technically, even though there were sports shows on the radio, it wasn't until today, 33 years ago, where WFAN did this for the first time ever.
Sports Radio 1050, WFAN, New York City. All sports, all the time.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the first broadcast of WFAN All Sports 1050. You're sharing a part of radio history with us today. This is the beginning of the first 24-hour-a-day sports station. I'm Susan Waldman. The message board outside Yankee Stadium today reads Vintage Guidry, and last night was indeed a classic Gator performance. Guidry struck out 9 and only walked 1 as the Yanks extended their lead to 2 games in the AL East. They're going on right now up at Exhibition Stadium and in the top of the
away,
fifth,
guys, the
no
fade
score.
Away. Susie Waldman. Folks, if you want to be the Yankees play-by-play some days, start as an update anchor at FAN, which Susie did. And, I mean, that's how it all started. Gentlemen, the reason why we are working where we are working today is because WFAN worked. America's first ever 24-hour sports talk radio station was launched 33 years ago today. The height of culture or the death of it? Ray, I think I know which way you lean.
I'm just glad I know who to blame.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, remember.
No, it's the sort of thing that seemed completely daft until it worked, and then it had a million progenitors from it. Even now, FAN matters in a way seminally in New York. That as good as the ESPN outlet there is, FAN still defines the art form. And even though I think in a lot of ways it's probably gotten a little old and musty for itself, it's still the thing that people go to. You think sports talk, and just generically, you think FAN first. You just do.
What part do you hate the most, though, Ray? Let's be honest. We know you hate parts of this, actually probably all of this. What's the part you hate the most? Is it the actual hosts? Is it the callers? Is it the logistics day in, day out? What do you truly hate the most of sports talk radio? Because honestly, if you were being honest, I don't think you necessarily love sports talk radio. I love it. I'll listen to other people. I'll listen to other shows. I'm sure you're not sitting around the radio listening to my show. So I'm just curious. What do you hate the most about it?
I think it's what happened when hot takes became important, because hot takes are the absolute 180 degree opposite of thoughtful, smart things, because basically any hot take is by definition hot by the fact that you yelled it, and it doesn't matter how stupid it is. It's the idea that you're supposed to get people's attention more than you're supposed to get people to think about something. And that's still true in way too many places around the country. I mean, Boston, you know, they're still grinding out about, you know, whether the Patriot Way will allow Cam Newton to celebrate properly. You know, I mean, God, it just screams shut up to me.
So there's a lot
of that.
What do you love then? What do you love? What's the element that you love the most? Who are the people that when you listen to, you're driving around and you're like, wow, I mean, I could listen to this person talk all day. What is the reason that you get so compelled on sports talk radio?
Well, I don't get compelled about it. There are times when I listen because it's caught my interest. I mean, I'll listen to Bomani Jones all day long. I think Dan Lebatard's show has captured the anti-sports talk radio thing.
Agreed.
Really well. But the rest of it, I don't know. It just sort of depends on what kind of mood I'm in. Sometimes I'll listen to NBA radio if they hit on a topic I'm interested in, or NHL, or even MLB. But it's not appointment listening for me. It's if I'm spinning around the dial, even that's an anachronism now. But if I punch the button and they're talking about something I'm interested in, I'll listen. If it's not something I'm interested in, I'll move on. It's got to hook me, not the other way around.
And what about you, D. Bruce?
Well, what Ray likes the least is what I like the least. The whole notion of everything needs to be inflammatory, and you can't start a topic without a flamethrower. And this whole, you know, like the embrace debate culture. Well, what about when there's nothing to debate? When two people agree on something, like that can also lead to interesting conversation. Not all interesting moments are started with diametrically opposed opinions. And it just feels like everything's so set up. I mean, I can tell you what Skip Bayless is going to say as soon as I know what the producer told the other guy to say. I mean, it's just this isn't what I really think. This is what the producer told me to think because it's the video package that they worked on and it's loaded, ready to go. It's 45 seconds long. So just, you got to talk over it for 45 seconds. I mean, I think I know a little bit too much how the sausage is made to sit back and think, man, that magician really cut that woman in half. Wow. I'm a little too close to the fire sometimes. The best of sports talk radio is when a topic really connects with your audience, and now all of a sudden you have different points of views and calls coming in, and an interesting relationship really gets born with some routine callers, and that to me is interesting. Too many callers can ruin a show. I mean, striking the balance. You can't be all things to all people at all times. You can't try to please everyone all the time, or you'll never last. I can tell you that there is a truth of radio that exists from day one. It exists today, and it'll exist until we are all blown off this lovely little earth of ours. There are only two kinds of radio hosts, just two. Those who got fired for saying too much, and those who got fired for not saying enough. That's it. That's it. Those are the only two flavors hosts come in. Because, oh, by the way, the middle flavor is boring. You weren't even listening to that guy. So it's something else.
To your point about hot takes and all that stuff, one of the things that we kind of have a running joke on our night show is nuance. And I dropped the word nuance 1,000 times during the show because there's so little of it nowadays. There's so little of it in your conversations with your friends. There's so little of it in sports talk. Everything is, you know, so clear cut and dry, this or that, and they're extreme polar opposites, when the reality is that somewhere probably in the middle with lots and lots of details and lots and lots of nuanced reasons why. But the other thing is, I think, authenticity. That I also think still rings true. Damon, it's one of the reasons why I grew up loving you and started listening to you back in the day. And Ray, to be honest with you, as little as you like me and as much as I love you, part of why I love you so much is the authenticity. You are yourself, and that's what you're going to be, baby.
God, stop whining. Jesus. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't spend enough time thinking about you one way or the other to have a hate on. I mean, you're fine. You're completely okay. And I know you like to dress this up as me being dismissive of you, but the only time I'm dismissive of you is when you say stupid stuff like that.
That's the closest you're going to get to an I love you, Joe. So
I felt like I got kissed.
Back away right there. That's as good as the relationship's probably going to get. Look, you are right, though.
I can't even answer that.
No. Nuance is dead. You are totally right about that.
Yes.
And the problem is nuance is most important in diplomacy and in politics, and that's where it died the fastest. And that's the problem that America finds itself in. I mean, everything is now Yankees and Red Sox. You know, it's not two different opinions working on the same topic. Is you're my enemy. I am your enemy. There is your point, which is wrong, and there is my point, which is right. If you thought about it, like if all human emotions were levers in a room in your basement, the two levers that the United States of America pulls the most often are the I totally agree, everything is great, or I am totally outraged, how dare you? There is no, well, let's think about this. That's interesting. Let's meet in the middle somewhere anymore. There just does not exist.
Totally agree.
Everything is black or white, good or bad, winning or losing, alive or dead. I mean, there is just, the gray area is impossible to find.
I mean, of all the television, all the radio, all of us consume, how often do you hear the phrase, you know, I never thought of that. I hadn't considered it. You just never hear that from anyone's mouths. Everybody knows everything nowadays. And the reality is I learn new stuff all the time. And I try to admit freely when I don't know something. But again, to your Pisces point about the hot take society, when you're listening to Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith, I mean, they know everything. There's not one element of the argument that they haven't already thought of because they've got 75 producers writing them a script.
It must be burdensome to never be surprised by anything.
Seriously.
The Titanic IQ that must just pinion you underneath your own central computing brain power is too much for any one man to really happen. Anyways, I told you today was two celebrations based out of New York. Number one, happy 33rd birthday, WFAN. No one here today would be cashing a check without that 33rd birthday. So tip of the cap. By the way, Sports Talk Radio, you're officially a 33-year-old chick now, which we all... So here's the thing, Sports Talk Radio. When you're 33, let's be honest, that's the last lap you get around the track before you start punching that category of middle age. So Sports Talk Radio is now middle-aged, which is perfect, because so am I. So it's lovely that Sports Talk Radio is now middle-aged. Bobby Bonilla. Kids, here's a little lesson for you. If anyone ever wants to defer your money, ask for how long and then for how much. And then if they say, we want to defer your money for about a decade, and all you'll do is pick up like 15 plus million on the back end, take the deal. And Bobby Bo did. Bobby Bonilla, my friends, in 2000, the New York Mets agreed to buy out the remaining $5.9 million on his deal. And instead of buying him out and paying him right there, the Mets made a deal. They decided to defer payment to Bobby Bonilla for a decade and then start annual payments of $1.2 million for the next 25 years, starting in 2011. Let me just say that once again. Instead of paying him $5.9 million and then never talking to him again, they decided to delay any payment a decade and then stretch out more than $25 million over 25 years. $6 million today, or $250,000 over a quarter century. Bobby, he made the right choice. He said, I'll take the deferred payment. So today, every July 1st, Bobby Bonilla gets his $1.2 million. Today was check number 10. He still has 15 coming. That's amazing. That is one of the all-time... You talk about owners needing to be saved from themselves. I don't know if there is a more New York metropolitan statistic to explain that franchise as much as that contract explains that franchise.
Well, but the contract also explains a couple of other things. One, the Mets didn't have a choice. They had so foolishly invested whole hog in the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme that they weren't very liquid. And they proposed this so that they wouldn't have to figure out a way to take out loans to get the $6 million they needed to get. So they said, well, we'll just kick the can down the road and eventually things will get better. Well, things never got better for the Mets, which is why when that thing kicked in and Bonilla said, you know, well, at 8%, I can make this forever. This is great. Bonilla wasn't even the first guy to think of it. Bruce Sutter, who had retired, I want to say, yeah, it was 88. I mean, he signed a deal that, frankly, I think has one more year to go. That's like 35 years of deferred payments. Griffey's got them. Ichiro's got them.
Allen
Ryan
Iverson.
Braun has them. Yeah, Gary Sheffield's got them. It's a great way when a guy tries to tell you, you know, let's figure out a way so I don't have to pay you this lump sum. They say, okay, tell me how many years, tell me what the interest rate is, or I'll tell you what the interest rate is. And the guy who defers it with the right interest rate is always going to come out ahead, at least in terms of the number of years where you can just sit back and go, I got a check coming on the first. Somebody in the NBA, and I want to say it's Darren Williams, but he did a deal where he makes $15,000 a day. That just lands in your bank account.
Every day. Ray's mic just cut off. Sorry about everyone. We didn't turn him off for $15,000. Are you back, Ray? Did you come back? Do we have a blip, a glitch? We don't got him right now. Okay. The
Damon,
Bobby Bo- I, yeah, go ahead, Joe.
No, I was going to say Allen Iverson has one of these deals with Reebok where he deferred a bunch of payments from Reebok, and
yes,
he's getting broke off. I think it was after his 40th or 50th birthday, whatever it is that it kicked in. But aren't we kind of burying the lead here? Like, I know we're crushing Bobby Bonilla, and he's kind of become a laughing stock. And obviously, the Mets have
always been laughing at Bobby. No one's laughing at Bobby.
Laughing stocks are the Mets.
The Mets are the laughing stock. Bobby is a financial freaking genius. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but don't you? I think there's a lot of young people that didn't watch Bobby Bonilla play baseball, and I think that they, I don't know, maybe they think that he's some bum. This guy was a great player. I mean, he's from the Bronx. He was so good. Switch hitter. He was almost 300 career home runs. Like, at one of my favorite outfields of all time, which made me into a giant baseball fan, Bobby Bonilla, Andy Van Slyke, Barry Bonds. I mean, oozing with swagger in the early 90s. I was a huge Bobby Bonilla fan because of those Pirates teams. So I don't know. I seen a lot of people slandering Bonilla, and I know the money, he made a ton of sense on that. That makes total financial sense on that. But he wasn't a bum. He was a heck of a ball player for a time there. Six-time All-Star.
Opening day starter Bob Walk on that team. I mean, come on, right? Walk Pirates team?
Doug Trebek?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't remember anybody ever dogging Bobby Bonilla.
No, Bobby Bo was a good player, except it did fall off quickly at the end.
Yes,
like, the way the Mets wanted to get out of that, it was, you understood why they wanted out, and he retired within a calendar year of them saying, mm-hmm, "Thanks for the memories, Bobby." So it did leave quickly, as it often does in baseball. But what is kind of amazing is that you look at Bobby Bonilla, who's been retired since 2001. And this year, Bobby Bonilla is going to make more money than two former Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks are scheduled to be paid in the NFL. Bobby Bonilla is going to make 1.2. Cam Newton's base from the Patriots is $1.05 million.
Wow.
Jameis Winston is making $950,000 to back up Drew Brees. Now, he took that in opportunity, but that's kind of unbelievable that Bobby Bonilla is going to have a better year than Cam Newton or Jameis Winston. It's good work if you can find it, kids.
It's the lesson that football players ought to learn, that having a strong union rather than a weak one is a really good idea. And you don't have to make all your money up front, even if your career is shorter. You know, figure out a way to get your money deferred if you can, so that 5 years down the road, you're not broke and broken down.
Right, weren't the 49ers, didn't they have a ton of sweetheart deferment payments for the Derek Deeses of the world and guys that weren't even on the roster going into like the early 2000s? Wasn't that always the excuse? Oh, they have all this dead cap money because they owe a ton of people. Wasn't that a thing for the 49ers after the salary cap got instituted?
Yeah, it was a thing because the 49ers didn't figure out the salary cap very early on, and they had so many players who were really well paid when Eddie DeBartolo was waving the checkbook around, that they didn't really get the art of capology early. And it took them a while, and it took Parag Marathe, who, you know, he's their guy who squeezes a quarter and makes it two. You know, he's the guy who said, you have to do this a different way. And the big mistake the 49ers made with Marathe is they gave him football decision-making power for a while.
Thank you.
And once they took him out of that and just said, all right, somebody's going to tell you this is a guy they want, you figure out the contract that makes the most sense. That's when he became a useful member of that organization. But the 49ers were late getting to that.
What's Parag doing in the replay booth? I don't understand it. Why is he there?
Oh, those are the good old days. Hey, by the way,
challenging. He had authority over challenges. Remember that, Damon?
Throw the flag, Parag.
talk about ridiculous contracts. So Allen Iverson did take, what, like $35 million in a trust fund after his 50th birthday or something like that, or 45th birthday? Okay, when he's 55 in 10 years, he's going to get all this deferred money. That was monstrous. Steve Young, do you remember that he signed like a 43-year, $40 million deal with the USFL? He had all those, annuity payments that were supposed to be part of it?
Yeah, for a dollar.
Yeah, and he didn't do it. He didn't pay in to get it to roll over, he took a lump sum payment, but he got paid upfront $4 million and then base salaries for 4 years with the USFL of like $200,000, $280,000, $300,000, $400,000. And the guy was like, oh, and then we'll give you $30 million on the back 37 years of the deal. And Steve Young didn't like reinvest in that happening and walked away with a lump sum payment, which I'm sure did well then, but looking at it all now, who knows? Still, Steve Young's doing okay. Don't worry about him. Don't cry for him. Argentina. I have found the worst programming idea ESPN has had in a while. You'll see it next Sunday night, and I'll tell you what it is right after this. Brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
What's the saying? You don't find the Grateful Dead find you. The Grateful Dead found me when I was like 8th, 9th grade. I kind of got into it and felt really good about the Grateful Dead my entire life. It's part of the reason why I wanted to move to California. Listening to Estimated Profit, I was just like, yeah, sign me up for that. You know, since Jerry Garcia's passing, I have seen Dead and Company. I've seen Trey Anastasio try to play that role, and he's a great guitar player. I've seen John Mayer do it, and he's a great guitar player, too. But I can tell you without any hesitation that the Grateful Dead have not played a Grateful Dead show since the day Jerry Garcia died. There is no Grateful Dead without Jerry Garcia.
Damon. Have you been to Jerry Garcia Amphitheater in McLaren Park?
Never. No, I've not.
Really?
Never, oh, no.
You need to take Rex up there and have a nice little walk. I think it would be an awesome spot. Ray, have you ever been? Ray, you strike me as a deadhead. I'm sure you got Skeletons in the Closet album somewhere in the basement, no?
No.
What? Just no? No, as in like you just don't
no.
like the Grateful Dead?
I don't have. I mean, I've never been. I tell you what, when I dropped off the Dead, frankly, was when Ron McKernan died.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Okay. You know, so everyone's got their breaking point. McKernan is Ray's. So, look, I tell you all that to tell you this. ESPN has officially run out of ideas. The last few Sunday nights, you know, ESPN has filled a void. With no Sunday Night Football, their Last Dance Michael Jordan series was five fun Sundays in a row, giving us something to talk about each and every Monday. Then they went to the Lance Armstrong thing, which, even though it was interesting, was not well received. I really wanted to like the Bruce Lee documentary. Wasn't nearly as compelling as I wanted it to be. And then the home run porn of Sosa and McGuire was totally unsatisfying. And it feels like ESPN has just been dropping the ball instead of winning on Sunday nights. Well, they're not even going to take another at-bat, apparently. Not next Sunday anyways. Just saw this on Awful Announcing. Ray, Joe, they're going to be playing an Eagles concert from the Forum because the Eagles were introduced that night by Chris Berman. So they're basically going to play an Eagles concert because there was a Chris Berman introduction. Now, I would tell you that's not the worst programming idea you've ever had. It's not the best, but it's not the worst until I follow up with this. So if you're going to replay an Eagles concert, it's probably for the Eagles more than it is from the guy who introduces the band. And if you're going to introduce the Eagles, Glenn Frey must be alive. Not only are they going to replay an Eagles concert, they're going to replay an Eagles concert after Glenn Frey's death, which means you're not even replaying the right tour of an Eagles concert. You shouldn't be playing Eagles concerts in the first place. But there you go. Not Philadelphia Eagles, the Eagles. Next Sunday, ESPN.
Hell has frozen over. I mean, jeez Louise. I mean, man. Are you a big Eagles fan, though, Damon, Ray? You guys Eagles fans? I mean, Hotel California is
no.
a classic.
Well, look,
really.
here's the thing. You cannot like the Eagles all you want. To try to deny them their place
exactly.
in music history is a fool's errand.
The
They're
catwalk.
One of the most popular, best-selling, most listened to bands in the history of musical notes. I'm not a huge Eagles fan, but every single person that has ever lived has had one version somehow, some way,
exactly,
hell or high water, of their greatest hits album. Even if you never bought it, it somehow ended up in your collection.
Yeah, the catalog is like long and deep. I mean, they got many generations covered. And to your point, they are one of those bands that everybody has the greatest hits. Everybody does have it. I mean, it's on my playlist, if you will. I got the greatest hits, the essentials. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
I never had that in my collection at any point. But, I mean, they were omnipresent, and I don't deny that they were, you know, a very popular band. But, you know, their magic evaded me.
Are you a Steve Miller guy? That's what you strike me as, a Steve Miller band guy.
Very early, but he got tedious really quick.
I saw him at the Fillmore. I didn't even realize half the songs he had. I was such a youngin' back then. He's got a heck of a catalog.
He's underrated, but I still think that it's a real hard leap for any band in any genre to overcome, to be better, you know, four albums in.
That's a good point.
That's the measure of greatness. Anybody can nail I shouldn't say anybody, but nailing the debut album, I mean, you've had years to work on it. The second one is a huge hurdle. The third one you can rally, but if you can still make interesting music after four of them, you're going to last because you deserve to last, because you've thought about it. And I just don't know that that Steve Miller did that.
Steve Miller Band is one of the first concerts I ever went to where I was, really? I don't want to say, no, I wasn't dragged to it, but I went in a little more reluctantly than the rest of the group. It was kind of like me and my friends. We live close to SPAC, Saratoga Performing Arts Center in upstate New York. So,
okay.
Anytime there was a concert you were sort of interested in, you went. And if seven of your friends wanted to go and you didn't really want to go, well, you weren't going to miss out on the night. So you bought the damn ticket anyways. So I roll into this thing, and like two songs, I'm like, wait a minute, Abracadabra? He does Abracadabra too? Like, I can't, and what? Like, Mercury Blues, that's also him? And Jungle Love? Really? What? And like, it was one of the more pleasant surprises. I had no idea that was that guy's song shows. I was a stupid high school kid. I didn't know anything. But anyways, I'm really surprised to see that ESPN is so desperate for sports that they're going to next Sunday night play an Eagles concert because Chris Berman introduced them.
Back, gone. I mean, it's just Steve Berman. He's been living great. This guy's playing in Pebble Pro-Ams. The Giants gave him a World Series ring. I mean, Berman, one World Series ring. Barry Bonds, zero. I mean, think of the life this guy has led. I'm so jealous.
Wow. Marty Lurie's got more.
Earned them, too.
The mayor of Oakland has three from the Warriors. So,
does she?
Yeah. She showed me one of them. It was impressive.
Do you think is she getting real hardware, or is she getting the secretary ring?
I think it's better than the secretary ring, but it's not player ring.
Okay, yeah. There
are three levels
different
of ring. There are... Yes. The guys who did the work.
Yeah, the big pun.
There are the people
player.
Who helped fuel the machine. And then there are the people who are hourly workers or just, you know, have a salary that's not putting them in any kind of discernible tax bracket.
So Libby shakes her hand. You didn't pull out the jeweler's monocle and get in there, see the carrots real close.
Let me put it to you this
gems.
Way. The presentation box alone was significant.
Yeah. Ooh. No, especially the box that the Warriors got their rings in was more impressive than like other teams' championship rings. Just the box it came in.
Yeah. But the point is Libby Schaff got taken care of.
That's when you know you have good alcohol too, when the box is like almost better than the actual alcohol inside. You know what I'm saying? When it comes in a big old box, there's something about that Don Julio 1942 comes in that nice box. You know it's special.
Well, isn't this where Apple wins your heart too? Does anyone do
great,
a better job
point.
Packaging their crap than Apple does?
Great point.
It's the best. As soon as you get a new iPhone, you're like, I am opening a sarcophagus of information, which will unveil the entire world to me. It's very exciting. Very exciting.
And it's so special that you'll be getting another one in 3 years.
Yes, planned obsolescence.
Just don't hit the update button. That's the key. If you don't hit the update button, and I do it every single time, they've sucked me in for life.
Oh. I do like a good update. Not the first. Here's the thing. Every single update, I bitch about it on day one. By the end of the week, I'm like, oh, this is better. I like it. I do. I think I like it. I'm pro iPhone updates. I'll take all the updates you can throw at me. As long as you don't start moving where I put my own apps, as long as I have to go, I'm not looking for my own apps, I can live. By the way.
Yeah. I was going to say, do your thing, Damon. Do
I was going to say, welcome. Joe, welcome to your 4 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco. A radio.com sports station.
We are halfway through the show. We are halfway through this godforsaken year. We are halfway through this week. So welcome to the halfway point officially of the entire 2020 calendar. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Matt is out today. We got the Butcher Boy, Joe Shasky, with us until 6 o'clock tonight. Marcus Simeon already joined us. He was spectacular. I know A's fans don't get nearly enough A's conversation that they want to hear. Simeon was awesome, and we will have that for you at 5:30 tonight. Doug Glanville is a conversation we've been waiting for a couple of days, and we certainly hope that we can have that a little bit later on. In an hour from now, a What If Wednesday is where the show will dive into. As we get back to sort of resetting everything, there were two things that actually happened from the world of soccer, which goes to speak to the challenges the entire sports world is looking at. We'll begin with this news that the MLS bubble, which is also in Orlando, has been infiltrated by COVID-19, and it is already widespread on a team that was in the bubble. FC Dallas just flew to Orlando. Positive tests before they took off, all negative before they took off. All negative when they landed. They get into the bubble. Two guys go down day one. Four guys, I believe, go down day two. And now, all of a sudden, the model that was being offered, MLS, this is the safest thing to do. Within a couple of days, it's already going wrong. And it just feels like a harbinger of bad tidings for what the NBA will try to do. Does the NBA have more juice, power to have more money spent on security protocols? Yes. The NBA's budget compared to Major League Soccer's budget is it's got to be extremely different. But this goes to show you there's no amount of money. There is no tax bracket. There is no element of here I am in life where I am immune to getting it. You might be at a moment of your life where should you get it, it won't hit you with as severe of ramifications as it would someone else. But there is no one immune to it knocking on their front door. And soccer has found out, and it feels like the NBA is bracing for the moment that it happens. They know. I mean, Adam Silver basically had a telephone conference yesterday where he said, look, I know things are going to go bad.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.